Hi, this is the final Chazar Shir for Contemporary Halacha. We're going to cover in this final segment the Halachas of Yerusha from a Shachter, Mechiras Chametz from Uri Orlean. We'll touch Lashon Hara from Rabbi Feldman and vaccinations from Rabbi Reichman, as well as Rabbi Brander's Pesach prep. Let us begin with Hilchas Yerusha. This will be the main, the first Shir will be the, I guess, the bulk of our time. The halacha of Dina de Machuzadina, do we apply American or national laws regarding inheritance? So it is clear that we do not apply Dina de Machuzadina for questions of Yerusha. And the reason for that, the Ma'arit Zalon points out, is that we only follow Dina de Machuzadina when there's one of the two parties involved in this interaction is a Gentile. But by definition, if you have a Yerusha between two Jews, we do not apply Dina de Machuzadina for such a case. Second reason why we do not apply Dina de Machuzadina is because of a drasha that the Rambam has, he sort of made it up perhaps. The pasuk says, Chukas Mishpat, to teach us that it's a din, not just of Mishpat, but of Chok, it's some kind of Isser Veheta kind of din, even though it has financial ramifications, therefore it's not going to be, it's not going to have, for example, Tanai will not work because Masa Masha Kazabatara, and similarly, we will not apply the din of Dina de Machuzadina on this on Hilchas Yerusha. In general, Yerusha always goes not to the wife, it always goes to the son. It doesn't go to the daughter either. If a son, if a man dies and doesn't have any children, then his father will get it. But the wife never yarshins the husband. Now, there is, however, a way that the Torah could, that one can manipulate a Yerusha within the parameters of the Torah. The pasuk says, "B'yom hanchilo es banav," the Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, the Gemara Bavasa points out that that is teaching you that you're allowed to be manchil to your children. What do you mean? But I thought the Torah says what how Yerusha works, that there's a Bechor gets his stuff and everybody else gets the other, the smaller share. So says the Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, that means if you have ben haban, if you have within the Yerusha, within the male sons, who will be inheriting, one is permitted to adjust the percentages of that which they get. However, it has to be, the two criteria are that it has to be people who anyway are going to be Yoresh. You could just adjust how much they'll be Yoresh. And the second parameter is that you have to phrase it in a positive sense. You can't say, my younger son should not get the full portion or should not get it all. My older son should not get the full portion, should not get it all. You have to say positively, you know, this son will get this percent, this son will get that percent. That's what a son could do. However, another possibility in terms of a morish giving over his stuff could be through the din of divrei shchiv merak chesuvachim surim dami, and that we have to listen to whatever he says. He doesn't need any kinyanim; it's binding. The issue at hand is that we don't know if Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka only allowed his teaching when it's a case of a shchiv mera, or even in a case of bari, and therefore it's a suffix, it's a nibay de l'ifshita, and we therefore cannot really apply this din of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka of manchil banav to a case of a bari. Let's talk about Pishnai. First of all, Pishnai doesn't mean that one son gets double, half of the estate. It means that he gets an additional portion. If there are 10 kids, so all the kids get 1/11, and the Bechor will get 2/11. But of course, the Bechor will only get double in that which is Muchsuk to his father, not that which is Ro'i, Lavo. So for example, if the father has a loan that's lent out and passes away, will the Bechor get double from that outstanding loan? So we assume that that's Machlokes Tanaim, and we assume that he will not collect that, double on that. Lavos are always considered Roy. Now the question is, what happens when you have money deposited in a savings account and the father dies? Does the Bechor get double in that? Well, that's going to be a gigantic Machlokes. You know, the Yehud and Roshach to assume that a savings account is nothing more than a halva to the bank, and there's no pishnayim on it, so there's nothing to talk about. But you know the bank is going to pay back. Well, it doesn't matter. Lo plug. It's a halva, and halva is a roi, never muchsuk, and therefore I don't care how certain you are. It's considered roi, and the bechal will not get. However, others like the Aruch HaShulchan and the Gosmo should disagree and say that if you know you're going to collect, it's vada you're going to collect. It is considered muchsuk, and therefore bank accounts can be collected from for the bechar getting pishnayim. Now, this is really important because Baal Yorish Asishto also is only going to be by that which she has as machzak. So therefore, if a woman dies and her husband wants to collect her money, what about all the money that she has in savings accounts? This is a, yep. So if we assume like Ramosha and Aruch HaShulchan, well, it's considered machzak, and the husband could collect that money. If, however, because the halacha of Baal Yorish Kishto is also only a din of machzak, not of Rai. If, however, we assume like Rav Nadav Yehuda and Rav Shechter, then it's Roy, and the husband will not collect it. Rather, her boys will collect her savings accounts. Now, let's go to the next point. The next point is Lo Tehei Ba'avor Yachsanta. The Gemara doesn't like people dripping out their children from the inheritance that they have coming to them. Story is in the Gemara is Yossi ben Yoezer wasn't happy with his son because he didn't become a Talmud Chacham, so he decided to donate all of his wealth to the Beis HaMikdash, and we see that Chachamim were not happy with that with Yossi ben Yoezer's doings. So the Igros Moshe says if the kids are completely disconnected from a parent, they went off the derech, or they married a guy, incredible Agros Nefesh, they haven't spoken for years, then you know a parent could just get them out of the will. But otherwise, you're not supposed to do it. Even though if you like you would have loved your kids to be a little bit different, you should not knock them out of your will. In terms of leaving tzedakah, the same issue is, when you're alive, you can't give more than a chomesh because you're going to become poor. But when you're about to die, you don't have to worry about becoming poor, so you could give more than a chomesh. And in terms of, you should bedafka give the pasuk says that the monies of tzedakah that a person leaves over should be distributed before kvura, because the pasuk says, v'halach lefanecha, tzedakah should be before you come up. So how much could you give to tzedakah if you want to give to tzedakah, but you also have to your obligations to your yorshim? So three shittos. The Ktzos quotes Gaonim that you only have to give 4 dinarim. Everybody rejects that. Rav Tuch Kuczynski suggests that we just follow Rav. You have to leave 51% to yorshim, and the other 49%, up to 49%, would be available to tzedakah. Igros Moshe says we follow the Chasim Sofer that you just have to leave a davar chashuv for each yoresh. That is sufficient. What's a davar chashuv? You know, Rav Moshe had in the tshuva $1,000, maybe now it's $10,000, $25,000. As long as you leave a davar chashuv for each yoresh, you could give the rest to tzedakah. Now, how can a person leave money for tzedakah? After all, tzedakah is not a yoresh. So, one possibility is because mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. But Another possibility is that Tosis points out this might be limited. The mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames might only be if there was hushlash mitchilaso l'kach, for example, placed in a trust account. So that would be necessary. There's another question. Perhaps maybe a father's interest in giving sign to tzedakah would be binding based on amirasa l'gavoa k'misrasa l'hediotami, and therefore it's like a kinyan already. So the question is, does amirasa l'gavoa only apply to hektish, or even to tzedakah? If you pledge money to tzedakah, and person dies, does that obligate, outstanding pledge have to be given? So Beis Yosef says that, yeah, it does apply to tzedakah, and tzedakah, from the time that a person makes that pledge, just like the Beis HaMikdash would own the money from that point, so too the tzedakah owns the money from that point, even if the pledger subsequently dies. His estate has to, you know, give that money. The Ramah ever says it's only a din of, Amiras L'Gavoh is only a din by the Beis HaMikdash, not by tzedakah, and therefore the estate does not have to give the money. So that's a machlokas achrona. Now, how does a father leave money for his daughters? So we have a shtar chatzi zacha. How does shtar chatzi zacha work? Forget about the percentages, but the way a person could leave basically his own will, how he wants to give daughters, he wants to give his wife. These are people who can't negotiate with as far as percentages because they're not yorshim at all. So the following solution would be the way to do it. Halacha l'maaseh would say like this. Person will say, let's imagine how much money he's going to have at the time that he passes away, and he'll be mechayev himself more than, let's say he'll have a few million, he'll be mechayev himself $10 million to the to his wife or his daughter. However, let's say he'll add another line that if, for example, you are willing to follow the whatever distribution I outlined in my will, I am happy to knock off this obligation that of $10 million that you have to my daughter or to my wife. So by doing that, what he's accomplishing is that he's not saying that there's a Yerusha happening. He's not saying that there's anything changed with his Yerusha. He's saying there's a Chiyuv. There's a Chiyuv from now for $10 million. Well, he's actually not going to say it's from now. He's going to say that the Chiyuv is from now, so it could be Bala Olam. But the Zechus Gevia, in case something happens, they get divorced, the Zechus Gevia will be a second before death. The Zechus Gevia of a second before death is the beginning of the $10 million. So now, if the Yorshim, the people, the kids who want to inherit their, you know, according to the, you know, the boys want to inherit anything, if they inherit the money, halakhically, and then they're going to have to pay $10 million, which is beyond what the inheritance is, they're going to end up with nothing. So they will be most interested in paying off the father's, doing what the father's will is, which he expressed in his will, to give them whatever, the woman, the mother, the daughters, whatever percentage the father wishes. And then that $10 million obligation is void, is crossed out, and they'll get, at least whatever the will said they should get. That, so the way the lawyer and the father could do that, the only person you need is the father with a lawyer or somebody who will be writing the will with him to just make a Isaac Kenyan. The way you do it is the father will say, in the event that I die first, then I'm a schayev $10 million to my wife. In the event that my wife dies first, so I wanted to go to my, you know, all my children equally, I hear my mischayev $1 million to all my children, you know, a huge amount to all my children equally. And then a Jewish lawyer, has to be Jewish lawyer because for Zechi it has to be Jewish lawyer, hands the father a kli to do kinyan chalipinin. And that's how you will have the halacha l'maisa, the will working. It is important to conclude with the fact that Rav Moshe only left a secular will. He didn't do this whole shtei chasi zachar business. So how could that be? It could be that Rambam says that even though normally a mekach does not occur with dvarim, ein mekach nikna b'dvarim, but the very strong kumiris das of an umdun demuchi, you could be koned even without a ma'isa kinyan. So perhaps Rav Moshe held that if you leave a last will and testament, that shows a complete kumiris das, and you don't need a kinyan sudar to effect that will. Let's go now to the, we'll talk about Pesach prep, Rabbi Brander's shir on preparing for Pesach for a community. I'll just go through a few points. Obviously, it's always important to make sure that people in your community are taken care of before, you know, well before Pesach, to know that they won't have financial challenges. In terms of Mechiras Chametz, you should know what you're doing for Mechiras Chametz. When you're cleaning, even if you have a self-clean oven, you want to not just clean the, you know, run the oven, but you also have to clean specifically the gasket on the inside of the door, because that doesn't get self-cleaned. When you have a glass top burner, those are not really kosherable, so be aware of that if you're buying a new oven. A stovetop, you want to avoid glass tops, because that can't really be kosher. It's a little bit of a complicated. If you're kashing the microwave, you could theoretically, possibly, machlokas, even if you will be kashing microwave, be aware that the glass plate, we're not going to kasher. Microwave is machlokas if we do hagala on plastic, so figure that out. If you do cover the fridge with liners, the fridge shelves with liners, if it's a slotted, if the fridge has slotted shelves, you want to make sure that there's ventilation. So you want to slice some airflow, some slices in the liners to allow the air to flow. You should just know in general, medicine, the CRC or Schefter hold that if there's something that's a pill, a capsule, a caplet, it's not really food, it's not chewable, it doesn't have flavor, that doesn't have the denim of chametz, and that's, even if it's going to be chametz, it's okay to take those. In terms of kidneys, kenyos, if they fall into tavshil, they do not aser b'diaved. The question, obviously, Moshe says that the gzera of kenyos was only on whatever it used to be, and therefore we don't have to worry about potatoes or peanuts, even if we do make potato flour or peanut flour. Peanuts now, the minhag did become to assume it's an issue. As far as quinoa, most of the kosher agencies allow quinoa, but you have to be aware that there might still be chametz in the quinoa, so you have to make sure you get a Pesach certified quinoa to make sure that it was that there are no other grains mixed in. Be aware, as far as cleaning for chametz, that you only have to pieces of chametz that are smaller than a kazayas. They're crumbs. They're smaller than a kazayas, and they're crumbs, and they're dirty. You don't have to clean them. So if you have stuff behind your fridge, behind your oven, that's a different issue. If it's not accessible, also you don't have to worry about getting it off, getting rid of this. Finally, diabetics, you should just be aware there are very good solutions. If you have dry wine, it's a lot less sugar, or there's almost no sugar compared to sweet wine or grape juice. Be aware of that. Okay, let's go to that was the end of Pesach Prep. Let's go to Mechiras Chametz from Rabbi Orlian. So Mechiras Chametz, we're going to talk about the history for a second and then the Kinyonim. So the Mishnah says that you could be Mochel and Achri, and Tosefta tells us that you could even do it in a way that you're going to get it back after Pesach. However, there's a girsa of that Tosefta that says, V'vavad shelo ya'arim, which in a scary way, the Ritva says, harama would be if you do it every year. So that means this leniency that Tosefta offers of being able to buy back chametz after Pesach is available, but one time. You can't do it every year. So that Ritva would mess up our Mechiras Chametzes. So the Beis Yosef says, don't worry about it, because we don't understand. That's not what the Tosefta means with Vavad Shelo Yarim. Vavad Shelo Yarim just means don't do harama, meaning don't make a t'nai in the Mechir. It should be a Mechira Gemura, but if it's a Mechira Gemura, you could buy it back after Pesach, even if it's every year. Now, the Shulchan Aruch allows this Mechiras Chametz, but only if it's to a guy Michutz Labayis. How do you deal with that? The Bach points out that once you had Jews starting to do business in schnapps manufacturing, they weren't able to sell their things to the chametz, to the guy outside of the house. So the solution would therefore be to give the house to the guy. So therefore, it's out of your house, it's not the guy's house. And the Bach there points out that you have to make sure that if you're giving him the house, you also have to obviously give him a key to the house, because if you give somebody a house without a key to the house, the guy has no smichas das, it's not serious, and therefore that won't work. In terms of how we are going to transfer the chametz to the guy, what kinyan do we do? Well, every item and person has a kinyan that works for him and for that item. So as far as a guy from Metaltalin, as far as a Jew from Metaltalin, it's machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Devar Torah, Malos Konos, or Meshicha Kona. And the Gemara tells us that whatever works for a Jew, the opposite will work for a guy. So if Rabbi Yochanan says Devar Torah, Malos Konos for a Jew, then for a guy it will be Meshicha, and vice versa. So which one, how do we paskin like? Well, it's machlokas, Rashi Tosus, if Malos Konos for a Jew or Meshicha Kona for a Jew, and therefore there will be similarly a machlokas whether which one works for a guy. Tosus says if you want to properly transfer metaltalin to a guy, you're going to have to be yotzei both deyos and you have to do both kesef as well as meshicha. So when we sell our chametz to the guy will give us kesef, and we did half of the job. The other half is that he has to do meshicha on the metaltalin, on the chametz, because it's metaltalin. But the problem is that, as we Bach pointed out, doesn't work. We just don't have that feasibility. So how are we going to get the guy to acquire? So the Rosh says, okay, so do a kinyan chatzer. Let the guy be kona the chatzer, and via the chatzer, not just to get it out of the house of the Jew, but also to be allow the guy to acquire the chametz thereby. Tosis, it seems, doesn't allow kinyan chatzer to work. Why not? What could be his problem? So we suggested, the Ktzos suggested, that the problem with kinyan chatzer is that chatzer is rabbi mitam shlichus. We know that ain shlichus le'akum. And therefore, how could chatzer be used via shlichus if a guy is not subject to the parasha of shlichus? So therefore, the Ktzos HaChoshen suggests, which is the maskan of most of the posts, that you use a kinyan agav, that by doing the makna, the chotzer, to the guy, it's not that he's going to be kona kinyan chotzer, but through the kinyan of the chotzer, he'll also be kona kinyan agav, the metaltlin, the things that are more tafel to the chotzer. Now, as far as understanding agav, we have to ask a question. Let's assume, it's a question, if agav is only the rabbanon, how could it work for getting rid of chametz, d'oraisa? So maybe you'll say, yeah, kinyanim d'rabbanon do work for d'oraisas, but there are some shittos who say that no, kinyan d'rabbanon do not work for d'oraisas. If you have something that you only own mid'rabbanon, you can't be mekadesh a woman with it. That's a shita in the Rishonim. So the way we suggest is a gevald gevort, I don't remember from the Evan HaAzel or the Reb Shimon Shkup, I don't remember, is that the lumdus of kinyan agav is like cream cheese on a bagel. When we say that you don't say a shahakal on the cream cheese, you just make a bracha on the bagel because of ikur and tafel, it doesn't mean that the bagel is important so it gets a bracha and the cream cheese is tafel so it doesn't get a bracha. No. Pshat is that when I said hamotzi on the bagel, the hamotzi is also on the cream cheese. The cream cheese got a bracha. What bracha hamotzi? Similarly, we could suggest that when you make a kinyan on the ikur, on the chatzer, it's not that when you make a kinyan on the chatzer, the tafel, the metaltlin don't need a kinyan. Adarabah, the kinyan of the chatzer, which is the araisa, will be chal on the metaltlin, the tafel as well. So therefore you have the kinyan hachatzer, which is the kinyan the araisa, that itself is being chal on the, via agav, being chal on the metaltlin, so therefore the metaltlin were transferred as well. That's one answer. How agav or kinyan drabbanon could help for chametz. Second answer of the Mekor Chayim is that once you did bittul, you got rid of the issur d'oraisa. So therefore, your ownership of chametz is only drabbanon. Midin ha-mevatel tzarech livdok, and therefore, a kinyan drabbanon could take care of a ownership of chametz, which is only drabbanon. Okay. Now, in terms of how you could do agav, don't you have to have, if I'm being makna to him my chatzer, and that's going to enable him to be kona my karka, what's going to happen to a fellow who does not own property? He only rents property. Well, that's okay, because you could just rent your land to the guy. But wait a second, what happens if you don't even rent land? So here we had a shas that chose a rashba who said that any land that you use, if you have a malkum kavun in a shul, a malkum kavun in a beis medrash, that would be enough to give over to the guy and piggyback upon it the metaltalin, the chametz, for him to be kona through kinyan agav. We also, in addition, because we're not able to do that meshicha, which would be ideal, we also do a kinyan chalipin. The problem that just doing kinyan chalipin raises is because the pasuk in Ruas, which is the source for chalipin, that is zos lefanim biyisrael al hagula v'atumra shalav yishnao zos hatudav biyisrael, says that only works for a yisrael. So that would be a problem as well. The Be'er Halacha points out that when you buy the chametz back after Pesach, he shouldn't just give you back the chametz, he should actually do it, meaning he has to do a kinyan to give you back the chametz, but you don't have to be as complicated with all of them. It's enough, says the Be'er Halacha, if you just give him kesef to acquire the chametz and the properties. And the Nachash also returned the Ishtar Mechira, and that is as far as Hilchos Mechiras Chametz. Let's go to the next shir. We're heading towards the end. Hilchos Lashon Hara. We know that there is Lashon Hara, there is Rechilas, Avak Lashon Hara. Let's talk about Avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara, there's two ways to understand what the difference between Lashon Hara and Rechilas is. One is that Lashon Hara is true, and Lashon Hara is just saying something not nice about somebody else, and Rechilas is saying that, oh, you know what, they said this, so-and-so said this about you. So Lashon Hara is doing the not nice thing, saying the not nice thing, and Lashon Hara and Rechilas is trying to start fights. Avak Lashon Hara. So is Avak Lashon Hara d'oraisa d'rabbanan? So what is Avak Lashon Hara? The Rambam says that Avak Lashon Hara is Lashon Hara that's not explicit. For example, oh, don't ask me about if he could learn. Meaning, you're not saying that he can't learn. You're just saying something indirectly, unexplicitly, but sort of understood. That's Avak Lashon Hara. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Avak Lashon Hara is a little bit different. It's like saying something that can provoke somebody else to say Lashon Hara. Wow, he's the best cook. She's the best cook in the world, which is provoking somebody else to say, oh, no, she's not. She can't cook for her life. So it's provoking. It's not something negative. It's just provoking somebody else to respond negatively. There's an Isser of Kabbalah Lashon Hara from the Pasuk, which we learn out from Lotisa Shem HaShav. Lotisa is to support, to enable, to allow Shem HaShav, a report that's unnecessary. The problem is that Rashi and Unkelus translate the word Shav as Sheker. So that means that sounds like Kabbalah Lashon Hara should only be if it's a Sheker. But wait a second, if it's a Sheker, then of course you're not going to be a Makabalit if it's not true. So Ella, Rabbi Yona suggests you can't uphold or listen or believe any report that may be untrue. In other words, if you know it's false, you're not going to accept it. But if it may be true, it may not be. You might be missing details, you might have misunderstood. So therefore, you're not allowed to accept it as being true. Rabbi Feldman presents a very cute chakira, whether the Isser of Lashon Hara is an Isser of it's just a bad midah that you're involved in, or it's a maisa Isser, that you're being mazik somebody, nafkamina, would be grama ben azikin, because grama ben azikin is pater, which makes a lot of sense, because if you see there's a maisa iser, it's being mazik somebody, you're not going to be able to collect and based in, because we know that if you do something lashon hara and cause somebody a hafsid, you're not going to be able to collect and based in, just like grama ben azikin is pater, that might be the same. Fine. What are the parameters of Kabbalah Lashon Hara? So the Chafetz Chaim has a very difficult parameter and says that you are, on one hand, it's also to believe that it's true. On the other hand, you're allowed to protect yourself from it. Chazanu said, no, how can you do that practically? The Chus Van Hagas, Moshe Sternberg, says, rather, the Isra of Bima Kabbalah Lashon Hara is that you shouldn't change your behavior based on what you heard. So perhaps this Machlok is telling on the Chakir, if it's a bad midah, so you shouldn't believe it at all. If it's just a Gram ben Azikin, it's a Mais and Hezek, so as long as you're not going to be it's not going to be Huzak, because you're not going to change your behavior towards that person, it won't be Aser. Obviously, if somebody, there are situations when a Shmias Lashon Hara is necessary, if somebody's in a position of authority and he could protect the people in his stewardship, so then he would be able to listen, even if and do whatever needs to be done. Keep in mind that if a reliable person, even a Neman can betray, even a Milsa David will include, you still cannot be Mekabel such Lashon Hara. in terms of the Purim spiel, what's the heter? Why does the Minhag go all the way back to Balazin allow it? We know that Lashon Hara Derech Silk is also Aser, so many paskin against it, Aser it. Mishnah Berurah suggests, maybe it could be that there's an implied Mechila, but the problem is Mechila doesn't, you know, might work by Momonos, but not by Tzad Guf, not L'chadchila. So perhaps a possibility to explain would be based on the Kula of the Gemara of Kol Milsa Demis Amr Ba'apitzlas is not Lashon Hara. If you're saying it in front of a few people, it's not Lashon Hara. Why? Just the opposite. You're saying it in front of so many people. So Tosa says, because it's not talking about real Lashon Hara. It's talking about when you say something that's ambiguous, which could be taken either positively or negatively. So if you're saying it's something in public or in front of his face, Ba'ape Mara, it's clear that you didn't mean it negatively, you meant it positively, and that's why you weren't scared to say it publicly or into his face. So you see from this Tosos that we look at Lashon Hara not just in a vacuum, but in its context. So it could be that in the Purim spiel, the context of the spiel is that you mean it as an affection, as a nice thing, as a, it's not really meant anything negative, and perhaps that could be a heter. Okay. Let's finish off the Chazar Hashir with just a minute about the discussion of vaccinations from Dr. Reichman, Rabbi Dr. Reichman. In terms of vaccinations, if the Shla writes that when there's a smallpox epidemic, you have your mechuyev to leave the city, and in general, the Ramah passes if there's an epidemic in the city, you have to leave. If there's magefa, what's the parameters of magefa? Shulchan Aruch says three people die from this disease for three consecutive days. That's a magefa where there's a tinus, and that's the shear of what constitutes a magefa. In terms of inoculation, the question of risking a few lives to save many lives. In other words, of every 1,000 people you inoculate, let's say you'll save 900 of them who won't die from smallpox or other diseases, but 100 might die, or whatever the numbers might be. So are you allowed to do that? So the Tiferes Yisrael and the Mishnah says it's mutter to expose yourself to that minimal sakana to prevent a greater magnitude of sakana. The Tshuva Me'aveh asks an interesting question. Could you get your... Let's say people come to give vaccines today, but they're moving out of town out of today. Today's Shabbos. So could you inoculate? Right now, no, you're not a chola. So are you allowed to do something? You're not a chola. Could you be Mechal Shabbos to get what you need? So if it's a area where there's an epidemic, then he has a kula that maybe that could already be considered a pikuach nefesh, even though you're not a chol at all, but it's an area where there's an epidemic and you can get it on Shabbos. There are different kinds of injections, and of the three kinds, the subcutaneous, intramuscular, the worst is intravenous because you're definitely going to draw blood, and which is Metilas Neshama, and that is... raises, you know, there's next point. The next point is that part of the way they used to do the inoculations is they would take some of the fluid from a blister and use that to put into the other person. So that would be Mapis Mursa. Normally, Mapis Mursa is going to be Motil Tzarech if it's painful, for example. It's an Melach Shantzich Lagufa. But here, you dafka want the pus from the baby who has it to put in somebody else. That is malacha that yes tzricha gufa, so maybe that would taka be a nesed daraisa if there's no one there's no one around you who's there's no pikuach nefesh b'faneinu, that would probably that might be aser. In terms of tetanus, getting a tetanus shot on Shabbos if a person got a cut, on one hand it's only preventative to not get tetanus, and some aser because you could just wait till after Shabbos. It's Eliezer, however, permitted. Getting a tetanus shot. In terms of forcing somebody to get a vaccination, most people hold you cannot force somebody to get a vaccination, but Rabbi Yashiv does allow it. A number of poskim did issue letters that if a menah wants to hold a kid from not coming to camp or to school because he didn't get a vaccination, so a number of poskim said you cannot refuse entry to such a person. In terms of different levels of sakana that exist, there are three levels if you're medayik in the various Rambams. The first is that there's a clear and present danger. That seems to be an issa deraisa, chiv deraisa to protect yourself from, for example, putting up a ma'aka and the like. Second level of things that are sort of, chacham, where there's a danger to something, you want to avoid such situations, so there... The Rambam says there would be makis mardus to, that might be something like if you don't vaccinate, people will die. So there should be a takans chachamim that would obligate you to do so. The lowest level of risk is that, like eating a donut. Each mice is not a dangerous thing. And here we'll apply Shomer Pesayim Hashem and won't necessarily be us. It's just the person should be careful. Hatzlacha Rabba on the review. And Be'ezus Hashem, you will do wonderfully.